He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. And Barry Kite is with us here
today. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. You know, the market opened pretty fairly strong, and then it wobbled. And now it's starting to gather some strength again. We've got the Dow right now up 116, so we're up triple digits. 35,369, and you know that 35,000 level has been kind of a key level that the Dow could not get through. It did for a while, and then it was below it for quite some time, and now it's back above it. And of course, the NASDAQ has retaken 15,000. The NASDAQ is up about 50 right now. And the NASDAQ is at 15,075. The S&P has retaken 4,500. Wow. Yeah. Up 19 today to 4,505. So we're closing in on all-time highs once again. The Russell 2K not participating. The small caps are not participating that much today. Crude oil's up 12 cents to 82.56. A lot of people saying there's no stopping crude oil until maybe 100. Silver's up 79 cents to 24.05. Gold up 13 to 17.78. The 10-year is up 3 basis points today to 1.61. So pretty quiet today. It did go up about 5 basis points yesterday. And Bitcoin, all the rage these days. You got a new ETF out there. I don't see it on the chart yet, but I think it's trading. BITO is the new Bitcoin futures ETF. Bitcoin up 854 to 62,600. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, 21 years in the trenches, and behind the mic here telling you what I see in those trenches every day. How long have you been in the industry, Barry? Quite some time.
Since 2000, and then my dad was in the industry, so we at least talk shop for much longer than that. I can remember him. I remember his face coming through the door in 87. So that, I'm like, I don't know what happened, but it looks like it was a rough day.
Yeah. So you're like Fernando Tatis Jr. Your dad was in the business.
Guerrero.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Tony Gwynn Jr. Okay. Well, you know, we've got a market that if somebody said what lit a fire under the market, because it looked pretty bleak a couple weeks ago. It was all bad news. I still have a few hedges in there, and I feel comfortable having those because this market could turn around on a dime, you know, the way things have been going recently. But I also said that, you know, we're kind of in between earnings season here. We're in on the cusp of it a few weeks ago when the market got really kind of squishy. I said, let's wait and see what happens during earnings season because that the market looks at that more than anything. And like I say, what has lit a fire underneath this market? The few earnings that have come in so far. And we've seen mostly just the financial sector. But obviously, if you want to know how earnings season is going, you just look at the market. The market will tell you how earnings season is going. And tonight we're going to get the first big tech stock, the first FANG stock. Netflix will report after the close. The N in FANG. I think NVIDIA is also an N there in FANG. I think there's two N's. But tonight we're going to see Netflix earnings. And Netflix is usually pretty uneven, okay? It comes down to kind of the subscription growth. It's chunky. But apparently they've had a few good I don't know. I don't watch any of this stuff, but the Squid Game.
Squid Game, right? They said it was potentially add $900 million to the to the top line, which is
wow.
That's a mover even for a huge, large stock like Netflix. And the interesting thing to me is it's international because it's a, it's a Korean. It's actually a Korean production. And so you look there. It's not just a U.S. thing, right? It's a it's a global streaming thing. So,
yeah, Netflix is ranked number 68 overall going into tonight's earnings. So it's been plenty strong. That's my database of almost 6,000 right now. It's ranked number 68, but it's a volatile stock. It'll go from 550 down to 450 just in a blink of an eye, and now it's back to 636. That's an all-time high on Netflix, $281 billion. It began with an idea of probably a guy who didn't like going on a Sunday night trying to meet the deadline to get that DVD, or what were they back then? They were tapes, beta, or VHF.
Yeah, they used to send me. I mean, in college, we used to, we used to get the DVDs in the mail. You watch it and you put it back in the mail and send it back.
That was the idea.
I don't even think that's a model for them anymore. I don't think that's an option.
It is a, it's a programming and movie giant behemoth at $281 billion. Okay, let's see. That's probably – we did get some this morning.
Procter & Gamble. Be an interesting one, and maybe we'll talk about that one later on in the show. But that one's an
Johnson
interesting
Johnson & Johnson, a few others, but nothing really excited. Okay, well, I like to always talk about some of these gurus in the market and what they're saying. Carl Icahn, who's been around for a while, sees the market hitting the wall at some point, not today, not tomorrow, after massive cash – infusions. He says that the amount of money flowing into the economy will create major challenges for U.S. markets at some point. He says in the long run, we're certainly going to hit the wall. He was on CNBC yesterday on the Fast Money Halftime Report. He says, I really think there will be a crisis the way we're going, the way we're printing money, the way we are going into inflation. And you know what? I mean, inflation is pretty much directly tied to a big increase in your money supply. You put a lot of money out there into the system, that's very inflationary. And the Fed has put a record amount, unprecedented amount of liquidity and money into the system. I don't see how it can be anything but inflationary down the road. Congress and the Federal Reserve have pumped trillions of dollars into the economy after the COVID-19 pandemic hit to prevent a more severe recession. And, Icahn goes on the record. Everybody's got their own opinion. I'm with Icahn on this. I think we're going to see massive inflation going forward. And, of course, there's ways to profit. If I'm right, there's ways to profit off of that. Now, one thing, Barry, I've learned in the business, you can't invest in what you think is going to happen until it starts to happen, right? I mean,
well,
everyone wants
to. You got to see the signal. You and I can get in a room and I tell the story a lot, but you and I can get in a room and have a $50 stock. We can do our analysis. We think it should be 100. We can be
right.
100. We can be right. We definitely right. But if no one outside the room right thinks it should be
100,
it's never getting there. So you've got to see it on a chart to know that the market's recognized that there's value there, and that's the technical side of our analysis.
Exactly. And I have what I think is going to happen, sequence of events going down the road in the markets and whatnot, but it's going to unfold a little bit at a time, and you can't get out in front of it. You have to wait for that scenario to start to play out. And where I see it first is in the charts of the market. And a lot of times it doesn't play out at all like you thought it would play out. Instead, it plays out in a – who would have thought when oil went negative that it would be $85 per barrel today? A lot of times it does not play out at all. you know, people have been predicting gold to go higher for quite some time and the dollar to crash, but you look at the charts, it's not happening at the current time. Yes, it could happen in the future, but like you say, you have to watch those charts, and that's where my rankings come in also, because I can start to see subtle changes in the market very early on. So anyways, that's Carl Icahn for what it's worth. When we come back, a couple other macro outlooks. I always like to look at these and weigh them out in my own mind, because the more information you have, the better the decisions you can make. That's one of my mottos. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Keit. We'll be right back. Today, I haven't had a chance to look at a lot of stocks yet as to what is leading the market, but a few stocks here. The NASDAQ right now, the Dow's up 133, and the S&P's up 23 right now. That's a pretty good move on the S&P 500, and I'm waiting for the NASDAQ. It's up 62 right now. Okay, I want to get one more macro outlook out of the way. There's usually a few each day that come out. And lately, I would say a key word in a lot of these macro outlooks, the word inflation. And there seems to be a lot of drumbeats. I would say that the larger firms, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, they're not too worried about stagflation. They are worried a little more about inflation than they used to be, but I'm seeing a lot of smaller firms that are very worried about inflation. Here's another one. Palm Valley Capital Management argued in a letter to investors that the stock market could suffer a brutal decline as a result of high valuations and shaky fundamental underpinnings. That's not a good combination if they're right. Now, see, now, I see this as these guys are way out in front of their opinion of what they think is going to happen, and they could eventually be right. But at the current time, I mean, the NASDAQ hit 15,000 yesterday, and these guys are sitting in 80% cash, 80% cash. They call the CPI numbers a fantasy. They say that rent has gone up by 19%. And that's not being accounted for properly in the CPI. So there's just another one. And, of course, they're on the gold and silver train. We view gold and silver as votes against the longevity of the bubble. Well, you know, and then you've got at the extreme, you've got a guy like, you know, some of these gold bugs that they're always bullish on gold no matter what you when they're interviewed. They have the same answer. I already know what Peter Schiff is going to say. When he comes on TV, the Fed is nuts and we are all own gold. And of course, he's been saying that now for 10 years. That's his opinion, and he's been wrong for a long, long time, and he continues to be wrong. But eventually, that very well could be a scenario that plays out, but it's just not showing that right now. The NASDAQ was up 124 yesterday. Did you look at Tesla yesterday? That thing is just incredible.
Yeah, that was, very resilient, huh?
And hitting new all-time highs, the EV Pioneer announces its first deliveries of its redesigned Model X SUV. I actually looked at that. It was time for me to trade in my SUV and get something new. I looked at the Tesla, at the SUV, decided against it, you know, but it's just unbelievable. Here's a stat that I saw. Okay, Bernstein, which is a pretty good firm, research house and investment firm, they did a math check on the electric vehicle sector. Of course, I've been saying this for a long time. The traditional autos today sell 99% of all cars globally, okay? But the market cap of the electric vehicles...
It's the other way around, probably.
It's incredible. Yeah, I mean, here you've got the electric vehicles representing 1% or 2% of the global. But I guess you could say, well, maybe at some point down the road, electric vehicles will be 99%. The combustion engines will be the 1%. But, boy, that seems like it's a long ways off. But the market cap is just way out of whack. You look at Tesla, of course, which counts for almost all of the market cap. Tesla closing in on $1 trillion, while GM is a lowly $82 billion. Okay, so Tesla is 10 times the market cap of General Motors, and I think it's fair to say that GM has 10 times the amount of cars on the road as Tesla. But Tesla has the wow factor. Tesla has the, just like Chipotle and Apple and others, it has those people that, you know, are Tesla fans and disciples of Elon Musk, basically.
Well, we have one of our favorite words, reoccurring revenue, potentially, right?
Yeah, potentially.
Some of the software and some in terms of some of the software and kind of your subscription services, I guess, once you actually own the vehicle. We'll see. You know, but there's a lot of we'll see how a lot of that plays out. Just in any disruptive industry, you never really know, right? Until see how things play out. So.
Yeah, everybody, it seems, is coming out with a subscription model.
Yeah.
Even Taco Bell, right?
Right.
Taco Bell has a subscription model. All the tacos you can eat, you just subscribe, and they deduct out of your account $25 a month or whatever it is. Okay, another stock that was on fire yesterday was Cloudflare, which we bought and own. And it's a little extended here, but boy, that stock just took off like a rocket. It went from 103. Yesterday, it hit 190, up $87 per share in 2.5 weeks. And I kind of saw that, water starting to bubble, getting ready to boil in my app. I saw the rank going up and the accumulation starting, and we've made a pretty good profit in Cloudflare. The symbol is NET. Another one that was crazy yesterday, Saks Fifth Avenue, which is no longer a publicly traded company. You know, they went into bankruptcy and all of this and that. It's privately held. But they reportedly are preparing an IPO for just their e-commerce business, which probably that's all they have anymore. I don't know if they have any stores. And they're reporting that the value of Saks Fifth Avenue e-commerce business could be in the $6 to $9 billion range. So yesterday, people started doing the math saying, well, what would Macy's e-commerce business be worth? And others. And those stocks bolted higher yesterday. Macy's was up 13%. Just on the news that rival Saks Fifth Avenue is preparing to undergo an initial public offering for its e-commerce unit. Well, that's craziness. That's crazy time, and stuff like that in the market happens from time to time. And Morgan Stanley, I guess, took a look at how much Macy's e-commerce business might be worth, and they said, "Yeah, you know what? This doesn't make much sense." Another area of the market, uranium, yesterday. It was unbelievable, these uranium stocks. And it's because of for the most part, it's an ETF that is now buying physical uranium. URA. And here's your trivia question. Is this Trivia Tuesday? What's the country that has the biggest deposits of uranium? Kazakhstan. So remember
one
that.
One of the stands,
for,
huh?
Yep. Okay. Remember that for trivia night. Uranium prices soaring. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of the Best Stocks Now Show. Well, not much has happened here during the break. The Dow's still up 123, kind of settled in here now. NASDAQ up 56. I wasn't seeing much in the NASDAQ that was really that impressive, maybe a 2 or 3% rise. And also in the Dow, it's pretty much... it kind of dulls. Travelers as a leader. Johnson & Johnson is up a couple of percent. Merck. Merck, you know, has got that new drug that has helped it a little bit, but that's where the leadership. Apple, too, looks pretty good. I would say Apple helping the Dow. And Apple had a show yesterday with new Macs and new earbuds, and it really wasn't very, it kind of was met with a thud, kind of like their iPhone 13, I guess. But Apple is having a pretty good day. Short seller Jim Chanos weighs in on China and their this hypersonic missile that they're denying. In low orbit around the Earth, capable of carrying a nuclear warhead, that raised a lot of eyebrows. China is really flexing its muscles, you might say, these days. And Chanos, who has been a pretty noted short seller over the years, he's always got some stock. I think lately it's IBM. He says IBM's guilty of accounting practices, and he has a big short position. Of course, he's been notorious for shorting stocks like Tesla and others, where he's just been killed on his shorts. But he is claiming that this militancy by China, he sees parallels to the 1930s when a global economic crisis ultimately led countries to undertake aggressive foreign policy actions that eventually led to the outbreak of World War II. Okay, all right. And he also sees signs that China, continues to get more and more, take a more and more belligerent stance, obviously, towards Taiwan. He says the situation in China is a little bit frightening to the student of history. Okay, well, I always like to hear people weigh in on some of these crazy things we're seeing going on around the world. Coinbase has been on fire lately.
Yes, it has.
Look at that thing. I mean... wow, just all of a sudden it's gone from 224 to 294 in 2.5 weeks. There's another one. To me, it's ridiculously valued. The valuation on Coinbase is ridiculous. But that doesn't keep it from moving higher. It IPO'd at 250, and recently it's been as low as 208, 224. It got as high as 500 the day it went public. And right now it's at 294. And, of course, there's a lot of fervor around Bitcoin this week. You know, people have waited for a long time for this to have a ETF. And there will be a bunch of them. There will be so many ETFs where you can get exposure to Bitcoin. They're coming. Well, Facebook, Coinbase jumped 4% in the pre-market trading after Facebook chooses the cryptocurrency exchange as its custody partner for a pilot of Novi, Facebook's new digital wallet. You know, Facebook had a good day yesterday, in fact. Facebook's having another good day today. You recently wrote up Facebook. Okay, Facebook is a controversial stock. And in fact, you know, some of our clients, you know, we own Facebook in our Premier Growth, but I have a few people that say, get me out of that stock. I don't want any part of it. Right. Give me your thoughts on Facebook. We've talked about this several times in the past.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's one of those, Facebook's one of those key things that, Republicans and Democrats alike can agree on that they don't like them. So it's they certainly not winning the public opinion battle.
No.
But you know, yesterday announced, and we referenced in the article, talking about wanting to build the metaverse. Now,
yes,
you know, all our listeners can go look that up, and when you figure out what that is, please send us back some information on what that actually is.
But
they added, they're talking about adding 10,000 workers across the EU to help build out the metaverse in Europe. So, apparently the metaverse is coming. I heard some politicians say that, they need to figure out the internet first, before they get to the metaverse. But I mean, it's a huge firm. I think we talked about how many
dominant
billion people look at one of their services every
2 billion.
Day. Yeah. It's a huge, I mean, they're reaching essentially, two-thirds of the globe almost on a daily basis to some extent.
It's nuts.
And if China let them, let them reach more people, then they would, the numbers would be even more. So it's one of those names that you almost kind of have to have exposure to. And anytime you've got that bad public opinion, it usually creates opportunity, in the stock.
Yeah, how many trillion-dollar companies like Facebook had a quarter like this most recent quarter? Their last quarter they reported, their sales were up 56% and their earnings were up 101%. Facebook will report earnings next Monday, I think it is, October the 25th. Facebook reports earnings.
Yeah,
but
compare that with P&G, Procter and Gamble today, right? Their costs, right? They mentioned that their transportation and raw material costs for the year, they're bumping up, are going to be basically 10% higher. They're talking about raising prices for Tide and razors and, other things to pass those on to consumers. But, think about Facebook, they don't have, their costs are much more minimal. I mean, it's workers, and a lot of their workers now with, being remote, there's talk that they'll actually be able to pay those, programmers less over time because they don't have to be in Silicon Valley, right, and paying huge,
right.
Huge home prices. They can work, from anywhere they want to, and your housing costs keep those down, which helps keep their wages down.
So. Yep, Procter & Gamble's a quarter. Earnings, sales up 5%. 5%.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, and their earnings were down 1%.
In a much more complicated business, supply chain, everything else, right? In terms of how to run that business.
Pride of Cincinnati.
Right.
So, anyways, we continue to like Facebook. My recipe for investing is I like growth. Growth at a reasonable price, as reasonable as I can get it. And I like momentum and performance. And Facebook has definitely put that up. It's been out of favor here for a while. It got clear down to its 200-day moving average. That looks like it was a good buy point because it has bounced hard off of that 200-day moving average.
And a 23 forward PE ratio, right? Which
that's not bad at all.
Certainly not for a tech and for a firm that's growing at the level that it's growing. I mean, I don't have the PEG ratio in front of me, but my guess is it's probably pretty palatable.
Well, let's see. The PE ratio of Facebook right now is 25. What do you think the PE of Procter and Gamble is? 25. Okay, same PE, and then the one you get 101% grower in the last quarter, and the other one you get a 1% grower. I think that says it all. All right, let's see. The other one I wanted to get to here before we got to go to break is European gas soars after capacity auction showed no increase from Russia. Russia said, oh, yeah, well, don't worry. We're going to give you a little more. Their gas, their natural gas surged nearly 18% after a much-anticipated pipeline capacity auction showed no supply increase from Russia. They've got Europe, you know, basically under their thumb with natural gas and natural gas prices. So anyways, that's why we have a little exposure to natural gas. And lastly, we look at oil prices. The Chevron CEO does not expect a pullback in oil prices. He thinks it's going to continue to go higher. And you know what? That's one of the ones I've just noticed as gasoline prices have gone up at the pump. I noticed that Joe Biden's favorability ratings, there's a very direct correlation. Putin's ratings go up with oil prices because Russia is an oil-based economy. Conversely, in America, the president's approval ratings go up or down with gasoline prices. Isn't that weird? And they've been going up lately, so Biden's approval going down. All right, I want to talk about the Fed real quickly when we come back. Then we're going to mention some individual stocks.
You got to go the way you want to go and do what you want to do.
And welcome back here to the final segment of the Best Stocks Now show. You know, I saw a story today on Jerome Powell that makes me think he's on his way out. I really do.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because two guys have already resigned, right, over this subject, and that is owning stocks or ETFs or mutual funds. Which on the one hand, it's really not fair to keep these people from not owning them. But when you know the inside information on interest rates that they know, well, you've had two Fed officials come under scrutiny earlier this year, Dallas Fed Robert Kaplan and Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren. They left the Fed after trades with Fed rules. I mean, they're within the rules.
Yeah, that's the problem, I think, is the rules themselves.
Exactly. But nevertheless, these guys had to resign because it doesn't look good. The optics are bad. Well, listen to this story today that just all of a sudden shows up, you know, what, 3 months before and, of course, he has an R after his name. He is a Republican. He was appointed by Trump, I want to say, originally? Or did Trump just renominate? Was he already in there?
I want to say he renominated because I know Yellen was in before. And I want to say that Yellen, that transition to Powell was, you know, it was right in that, you know, I think it was in an election year. I've got to go back to when the exact time. It was either right before he took office or right after. His name was in his mouth. Trump was, you know, mentioning Powell's name, you know, even prior to the election, if I'm not mistaken.
But, well, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell sold. Now, this may be because of pressure. He should have never sold. Why is he selling is what I want to know. Yeah. What does he know that we don't know? He sold $5 million in a broad index fund. Well, it's the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, VTI. Back in October of last year, the sale was first reported by the American Prospect. While the Prospect's headline said Powell sold while the market was tanking, well, it wasn't exactly tanking. The Fed chief sold before a 1.5% pullback after the V-shaped recovery, which I predicted. The S&P then resumed its march higher. Actually, he's worse off, I would think, for selling, you know, when he did.
Right.
In December, Powell sold smaller stakes up to $250,000 of the Causeway International Value Fund, the Goldman Sachs U.S. Equity Dividend and Premium Fund, and the iShares ETF, EFA, and the iShares Russell 2000. I don't know. You know, I just think that, and Elizabeth Warren recently called him a very, very dangerous man. I would now be surprised if he is the Fed chairman, you know, after, what is it, February, I think, of next year. This just kind of all of a sudden surfaced out of nowhere. And there's a track record of what happened to the previous two guys that all of a sudden it surfaced on also.
I'm right, surprised it's not in a blind trust. I mean, I've had clients who worked for the, you know, for the nuclear, you know, who used to basically work for a nuclear organization for the government. And, you know, we had to make sure that they didn't own certain things, right? And, you know, including it couldn't be held in a mutual fund. And then, you know, right. You're essentially submitting that information. So it's just, to me, it's the rules in general at the entire Fed. They should be in some form of blind trust because you're making a market bet, which is probably easier for them to make than it would be if they were just purchasing individual stocks, actually.
The Fed has more power over the market than any other agency
certainly.
Out there. Okay, the two stocks that jump off the page to me today, ServiceNow, which the symbol is NOW. I've always liked that one because best stocks now, and this has been a best stock now off and on for many years. It's bouncing again today. It's up $16 per share, and we own it in our premier growth portfolio. It's a software cloud stock, probably the, other than Salesforce, which I believe Salesforce is now in the Dow. ServiceNow is right up there, you know. Let's see, Salesforce's market cap is $287 billion, and ServiceNow is $135 so about half the size of it. And then, of course, the founder of ServiceNow, N-O-W, also started Snowflake. Just add an S in front of ServiceNow, S-N-O-W. Look at that chart today. That's doing really well, too. That's now a $100 billion stock. So this guy that started ServiceNow, he's done all right in starting companies. The other one is kind of, you know, every time that Charter Communications pulls back, I add it. I don't buy more for our existing clients, but I buy it for our new clients, which new clients are coming in all the time. And you know, Charter just went through a pretty hefty sell-off, but we're still way up on this stock, way up on it. It's been really good to us, and it pulled back. I had some people complaining, well, are you going to sell Charter? And no, I don't think so. When it hit that 200-day, someone questioned me. I said, I'm going to buy some right here for new clients. It hit it about 5 or 6 days ago, and it bounced hard off of that. And someone said, you're buying it here? I said, yeah, it's been good to me. It's sitting on a technical support level, and it's having a nice day today. It's up $11 per share or 1 point. You know, that's another one. You talk about, I only got 1 minute. You talk about Facebook being a hated company. Most people hate Charter.
Because
it's their cable provider. Yes. It used to be called, it had a different name. And
I'll remember them again.
They had to change the names. I think they were Spectrum. Because everybody
Spectrum
hated
now,
them.
So they were Charter.
They're Charter now.
Charter, right? And
yeah,
then the service is now Spectrum, I think.
Something like that.
It's kind of like Xfinity and Comcast, you know?
Yeah. But Charter has done a great job of growing their earnings over the last 5 years. They've averaged 71% per year. Take that, AT&T. And the stock has done fantastic. All right, well, we're out of time today. I have an important update on the earnings season last Friday in the newsletter. We had some new buys last week that showed up in the newsletter. You can get 2 free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. Of course, Barry, he's busy talking to people all the time while I'm managing money, and our team is out there talking to people, too. You can reach us at 855-611-BEST if you want to have a conversation with us. 855-611-BEST. Be active, not passive. Have a great day.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.